the XR Motion Podcast with your hosts, Michael Steinberg and Andrew Ho.
All right, welcome to the XR Motion Podcast, where we go over everything AR, VR, NFT, AI, Metaverse, whatever that is, you name it, we go over it. Today, we have a very special guest, somebody whose work I've seen all over the place. But before we get to our guest, we have the world's most amazing co-host, Andrew. How's it going, bud?
I am good. I am exhausted after a weekend of moving. If anyone's thinking about moving, I do not recommend it. It is definitely way more work than I thought it was going to be. And I'm getting too old for this kind of physical labor. So aside from that, though, I am good. It's finally like spring in New York. So that's been really nice, soaking up some nice weather. And also very excited to chat with our guest today.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm super excited for you moving out. I mean, your studio it looks great now.
If there's video attached to this when you're listening, this is it.
Yeah.
Here I am.
And believe it or not, Andrew is still in Brooklyn. You might not believe it based on how big his office is right now, but yes.
This is the only reason I'm here is I was like, I can have a bigger office. So, yeah, so super stoked to get settled in and start cranking out some new stuff too.
Awesome. Well, so speaking of awesome, we have an awesome guest here with us. It is Steve Christie. How's it going, man?
How's it going, guys? What's up?
Oh, man, it is so good to have you on. For anybody listening, you have got to check out his work. It is death_render. As soon as you type in like death, he'll just pop up instantly because, yeah, he's got so many fun videos online. So definitely go check it out. But yeah, Steve, I just want to ask real quick, where are you currently located and what got you into the field?
Currently, I mean, I'm in San Diego. What got me into the field is personal interest. I'm a self-taught Blender artist. Obviously, just started with Blender because it was free, easy to pick up, and there's tons of tutorials online, you know. Graduated from a YouTube university. So that's where I learned everything, you know, as most of us do, I think, honestly. I used to be in the music industry. I went to the LA Recording Academy, graduated from there and spent a couple of years working at recording studios, and then kind of fell out of love with the music stuff and then got into the visual stuff and about a year ago and yeah, fell in love. And so now it's kind of like my inspiration is just going off of music and kind of combining that with visuals. And so naturally I kind of gravitate towards like working with artists and stuff like that. So that's kind of my bread and butter.
It is crazy to think that you've, first of all, only had a year of experience doing the visual side of stuff, because it is super polished and very, very fun and nostalgic for me. And I'm sure anyone who goes and checks it out would kind of feel the same. But what I have to ask is, you know, coming from like a music background, which I have met a lot of animators that have a music background, and I think a lot of it is tied to sort of the idea of timing and understanding movement. I mean, you can have movement in audio in the same way that you can have movement in sort of visuals. What skill sets do you think have translated for you to be so successful with like only a year of experience doing this from your music background, if any?
Yeah. I mean, right off the bat, I think it would be a lot of just, I don't know, getting surgical with stuff, you know, and it comes down to minute details, especially when you're producing a song. You go over the same parts over and over and over and kind of perfect things. When you're keyframing, it's the same thing in music, you know, you're keyframing and automating sounds and reverbs and levels and all sorts of stuff. Same goes for like 3D work, you know, and animation. So I think I kind of took to it naturally, I guess. I think the whole time, you know, when I was going to school, even when I hear music, like I always have something to go along with it in my head is in terms of like visually, you know. So I think it just flows. I don't know.
No, yeah, actually, I think Mikey, I feel like you and I were recently talking about this where you were like, if AI ever gets good enough that I can just like plug into my brain and it can see the music
yes.
when I listen to a song. And I do, I mean, as soon as you said that, I feel the same way. I'm like, you know, I also sort of dabble in music on the side, and I always have, I, you know, from, I remember a very young age, like listening to music and just being like, I could make the music video for this song and it would be amazing, you know? So
exactly.
Being able to translate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought about that too. Had that thought of like, man, if I had this song and like, I could just plug a computer into my brain and have it like lay down some visuals or like vice versa with like music, you know, if I saw a video or something and just like, I had a song in my head and just had it plotted out. That'd be so nice.
Absolutely.
One day.
Actually, one of the, I think that's so like the idea of, sort of, there's been more interactive experiences where I've seen, you know, like for example, triggering visual effects with like MIDI pads on a drum set. So like as a soloist is like laying down a beat, you're getting this like simultaneous, you know, visual experience. That kind of stuff is so cool. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, that'd be badass. Kind of like visual DJing, you know, VJ people that do concerts and stuff like that. You know,
absolutely. Kind of like
sort of thing.
There are a lot of very talented VJs in Brooklyn.
So there's so many. It's like exploding.
I didn't even know it was a thing until a few years ago, and then suddenly it was like, oh my god, you guys are doing way cooler stuff.
Yeah. So the programs you use Blender, correct?
Yeah.
So how is it working in Blender? What made you choose Blender? And what are your thoughts? Do you experiment with any other programs, or are you pretty much just like, it's a one-stop shop?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do some compositing work in After Effects. It just kind of depends on what I'm going for or what I'm doing, I guess. But yeah, most of it, I would say like 90%, if not 95% of the stuff I do is just solely within Blender.
Wow.
And I know like with 3.5 coming out, like the real-time compositing too, that's like a huge thing for me because I do like some compositing work in Blender still. So yeah, that's, I'm excited for that. I haven't updated it yet. I
didn't realize how quickly 3.5 was coming out. Like the real-time compositing, for those of you who aren't familiar or are listening and curious, like definitely check it out. It is wild. Like I saw some of the tech demos of just, even just basic stuff like adding lens vignetting or, you know, some like glare and glow effects to sort of stylize your 3D render, being able to like work in the viewport in real time and not have to, you know, render something out and then give a compositing pass and then wait for that to render. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like I'm, that's like a huge kudos to the Blender team for pulling that off. Cause it's, I feel like it's a, especially in, you know, you think in the world of Eevee and like the real time engine they have, I mean, it's huge. You could do, it's not, I wouldn't say it's competing with Unreal. And unfortunately it's like Unreal 5 too, just looks mind blowing. So it's really hard to compete with that. But it is great to see that, you know, it's a all in one kind of program where you can, you know, execute all these different steps of production, which is awesome. And it sounds like kind of your workflow. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to ask, I mean, you just got, you know, it sounds like you're kind of just getting started here at, you know, with such a, you know, small amount of time that you've spent in the program, but I am curious just from like an aesthetic standpoint, obviously there's a lot of nostalgic elements here for me, sort of Pokemon, you know, vibes everywhere, which I love. Was that sort of a function of you use that? I personally have used Pokemon as a way to practice modeling. I think it's a great modeling exercise.
For sure.
But like, was there any sort of, reason for sort of starting that way? And like, it seems to have been in a lot of your work since.
Yeah. I think I started it because when I first started Blender, I was into like isometric scenes. And so what I would do is basically create like a small environment, like an isometric environment, and put a Pokemon in there. And people loved it. Like it blew up. And then I started making like NFTs, and then kind of got out of that for a little bit. And I don't know, I just kind of stuck with the Pokemon just because obviously people love it. I love it. I've been a fan for God, since I was like, you know, 7, 8 years old, whatever.
Yeah.
So just kind of seemed natural and made it fun for me, honestly.
I mean, and you've been able to like extend the universe and use, you know, it's even from like your, what you started with to where you are now, it's pretty obvious that you've been able to like adapt and mold that to maybe the kind of stuff that you're working on or the styles that you're more interested in?
Yeah. It's funny too, because I get like, I don't know, I've been doing a lot of freelance work, and I don't know, I feel like I just have a lot more inspiration when I'm working with Pokemon stuff. For some reason, it just like, you know, I have so many more ideas that just come to me and flow and everything like that. And obviously you just have
more. Well, I mean, there's probably, yeah, probably something to be said about like, you know, it's a, when you're, you know, you said you've been a fan forever. It's like, I was probably about the same age, like 7, 8, 9, where I really got into Pokemon. And like that frame, that state of mind is like a hard place to get back to as an adult, where you're sort of, you know, you don't have like the same filters that you see the world through, and everything's fun and exciting. I can remember popping in like the first, you know, red or blue and just being like, this is like a whole world I want to explore. And like, what, you know, what if I could like go off and like the, remember Masingo, the like, the glitch Pokemon you could catch where you'd have to like, you know, there was like all this like lore and, you know, I don't know, as a 3D artist, it's like, those are the kind of environments and places that you want to recreate. So I think it makes perfect sense to be like, anytime I work with Pokemon, I get excited because it sort of opens up that part of your brain.
Yeah, it does. It's funny too, because I've like had chats with so many like, I don't know, full-blown adults that are just like still geeking on Pokemon. And yeah, it's just cool to connect with people like that. You know, I'm 32 and I still love it. And I've met tons of people who are the same too, you know, so.
Yeah, 31, dude. And I'm like, I recently was like, I would get a new Nintendo console just to play the latest Pokemon game. But it seems like the last ones have kind of started to, I don't know, maybe not go as well as the others. Yeah. So I'll leave it at that. But I also wanted to ask too, I mean, you mentioned freelance. So, I mean, I think it's amazing that it's like, you just started with Blender a year ago and you're freelancing in it immediately. I mean, that's the dream. If you can, I mean, what kind of work are you doing freelance? You know, what kind of skills are you using that you've been practicing in Blender that sort of afforded you the opportunity to start freelancing?
I don't know. I think it's, I made a couple of the Pokemon videos and then immediately those kind of took off, like, especially on TikTok. I made a TikTok and like, I had like 50,000 people following me within, you know, the first week, I think.
Wow.
So I don't know. I was jazzed on that, obviously, but that got me tons of work. It's mostly people like artists, producers, DJs that want like either Spotify canvases or a short music video or promotional work or whatever. I'm actually working with a couple like Pokemon. What is it? They're just like one of them. They sell like in-game items online that you can like purchase and then they send them to you. I do like work for them all the time. It's fun. Yeah.
Nice. That's amazing.
So I got to ask the big question, might be the biggest question the whole night. Who's your favorite Pokemon?
Oh man.
That is a tough one. I mean, also cause there's so
I'm a Gen 1 through 3, like diehard, especially Gen 1, I think, because I mean, I've played Red and Blue, God, I don't even know how many times. Like,
how many times?
Even now to this day, I'll go back and play them. They're shit games compared to, like, you know, 2 and 3, but still. But I'm going to have to go with Alakazam. He's just like,
wow, yeah.
He's the man, you know, and especially like growing up, he was always this elusive guy I could never have because you had to trade, you know, to get him, and I never had friends
so hard to get. Oh, that's right. It was like the whole the trading cable, like, did it trigger an evolution or was it like,
yeah, so if you or... if you had like a Kadabra, which was like the second phase of evolution,
right?
Getting an Abra was hard enough. Yeah, as
true. And then if you traded the Kadabra, once you leveled up the Abra, the person who got or who you traded it to, it would evolve and they would have the Kadabra or the Alakazam. So like, the whole thing was to find a friend that you trusted enough to trade to evolve it and then trade back. You know what I mean?
Trade back. Yeah. I'm sure friendships were completely shattered.
Over 100%.
That game functionality.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And for reference, I can't have a Pokemon conversation without saying my dog's name is Eevee.
Oh, so, awesome.
And people are like, oh, is it short for Evelyn? And I'm like, it's just the Pokemon.
Nice. So, what kind of dog you have?
Eevee might be She's like a Great Pyrenees Chow Chow mix. She kind of looks like Evie. I mean, she doesn't really, but she does. So it was close enough. But I think, yeah, I think Evie was my favorite. Mostly just like I would have to restart the game to like, because you only got Evie once, right? And then it was like you could give it one stone. And so it was like, do I want to have Vaporeon or what was the fire one?
Flareon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jolteon. Now there's like Jolteon. There's like 8 or 9 different evolutions you can have now.
Wild. Yeah, wild. So again, I mean, here we are. We were like, so what's like the Pokemon theme? Oh, well, it makes me more creative. And now we've just talked about Pokemon for 5-10 minutes.
No, so, I'm excited. And there's also, I mean, it's so relevant to our industry just from it still being a mainstream thing. I mean, the art is really what kind of I felt like was things people love. You go into the trading card game, massive, right? You go into AR, even Pokemon Go. Game changer. I mean, that like changed, dare I say, most of humans' reality on what was possible
I was kind of taken aback to think that, you know, to realize recently that like there's still a huge community of people playing
Pokemon. Oh my god,
I know,
insane. Yeah,
but, like, I didn't realize it was
Pokemon Go, the cool trading card game, all that is still so huge, and I mean it's only getting more popular, I think. I still have all the Pokemon cards that I collected like way back in the day, and I've got some.
You got like, so you're like riding in Lambos.
No. Yeah. Oh, I don't know about that. Not yet, but I've definitely got some pretty good cards. That's for sure. But I mean, I've always thought about selling them, but I was like, they're probably not worth anything. And then like Pokemon Go came out, and this huge resurgence of like the popularity of everything kind of just came back, and it's still going strong. I don't think it's going to stop.
You're like the guy that held on to his Bitcoin and didn't lose the code.
Yeah.
We all had it. I can't believe what was I mean, even the Charizard, I know this is like so off 3D, but I mean, it's just really funny. What was the Charizard just sold for, how many millions recently?
Oh God.
It was, I want to say 20 million. It was something crazy. Yeah. Charizard, Pokemon card.
You got too much money if you're paying 20 million for a, I mean, that's cool, but like,
I've got two of the Shadowless Charizards. I don't know if they're first edition or not, but I know those are like worth a couple grand if they're in like good condition, which none of mine are graded. They're just like, you know, in a book.
Sitting in a book. Yeah.
Who's that? Logan Paul. Yeah. I think it was like Logan Paul or something that was, he made, I said 20 million. I think it was more like 500,000. Mm. Oh, no. 6 million was for a single Pokemon card.
You know what? Honestly, if you made more than 20 bucks, that's a win in my
life. Yeah, true. Like, back then, like, the pack costs, like, what was it, like $5 or something? If that.
I don't know. And you remember you buy it with your friends and you'd all just, like, sit around and you'd be like, all right, we're going to get the It was like there was a way to like shuffle the deck so that you'd see the holographic ones first or something.
Yeah. It was funny. My dad used to buy me and my brother like 3 packs at a time, and I get so competitive with him. If he got like a better card than I did, I'd wait till he went to bed or something, and then like grab it, put it in my deck.
That's good. Just looking at your work and seeing what you've done, managed to accomplish in the last year. You mentioned Unreal earlier. I am curious, like what is, you know, not only what are you working on now? I mean, you mentioned the freelance stuff, but what are some of the skills or tools or, you know, functionality of Blender, you know, 3.5 coming out, that you want to be focusing on moving forward and kind of experiment with?
I definitely want to learn Unreal. I think it's a worth time. It's worth the investment in time to learn that. I mean, it's real time, and like, like we talked about, I was watching the demo as well. And when they were building the landscape with the Rivian going through, and everything's just procedural, just drag and drop.
That was wild.
It creates everything like on the spot. It's incredible. I definitely want to learn that. And just the ability to be able to make more creative decisions faster. And it just speed up the process exponentially. Because as we all know, as 3D artists, like the biggest problem is, vert counts and viewport lag, and it slows you down so much. And if you could just see everything real time like that and just plug and play and off you go, it's definitely a worthy investment in your time.
I was going to say, but my next question would be like, the environments though look like there's just some, there's like a level of detail and attention that, you know, you're, it sounds like you're building your environments that you're then placing these
characters. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that was my big pull towards Unreal, was just for environment building alone. And then if I could like animate in Blender, maybe if it's easier for me, and then import into Unreal and then just do everything from there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Final Pass out of Unreal. You know, I don't know if you follow Ducky 3D. Oh, yeah. On YouTube. Yeah, so I mean, you know, just like always has really great takes on stuff and really useful information. I feel like he had a video recently, and I'm gonna, you know, I'd have to go back and look on the specifics, but essentially he was talking about like one of the hardest things to master when you're doing renders is you know, what do you put behind your scene? Like, what is the environment that it's in, right? And so like you can do HDR stuff, you can cheat it with, you know, image planes that you're throwing off in the distance. It's like out of focus, you know, there's all this stuff. And I definitely, that's something I struggle with. And when I see like the Unreal stuff, I'm like, oh my God, like I would love to be able to spin up an environment. The reason I don't do that now is because it's just like, there really aren't, I mean, there are, especially in Blender, there are some tools like Botanic, which can do like really good, like tree gen, ivy gen, you know, grass gen, but it still just takes like, there's a lot of spin up to it. And so the, you know, the idea of like just the environment design that you can pull off so quickly with such great results in Unreal is like, that Rivian demo, I was like, I need it. I have to have all this.
Exactly. As soon as possible. Yeah, that's something I kind of struggled with at first too. And I still kind of do with like world building or environment building, is just hiding. Obviously, you're going to have like spots where it's like, that doesn't look very real at all, you know? And
right.
Kind of, I don't know, for me, it becomes a head game. Like I plan everything out before I even start, and I'll even draw like pictures and stuff. And like, I don't look at references a lot, but I don't know. I'll think in my head, like, okay, like if I had this shot, like, you know, I have the foreground and then maybe I can make something in the background and make it look like it's all just one seamless landscape. Sometimes I'll build this enormous landscape in Blender that just slows down my viewport to like an ungodly slow amount.
So I don't know if you have you ever used there's an add-on in Blender called HDRI Maker, and they recently added a functionality that basically does, it's like HDRI projection. So instead of just having an HDRI image that could be visible to the camera, it's the HDRI stretched over a dome that then gets placed over your entire scene and maybe has some like displacement maps or normal maps attached to it. So you do sort of have an added level of realism to your HDRI. And sometimes I find that can be a, like a pretty good starting point too, of just like, you need to add a little bit more depth, but you don't really feel like, you know, going in and rendering out a whole separate passive background assets kind of thing. And I agree with you. I mean, I hear you on viewport lag. Blender's viewport, sometimes it's the hardest part for me, is where you just get to this point where you're like, ugh, I can't keyframe anything. I can't get a feel for like how this is actually moving because my viewport's going at, you know, 4 frames per second.
Yeah, it's horrible. I learned the hard way too. Animate everything first and then put in like, you know, your landscapes and everything around that. Just so that you know at least.
I just get too excited, you know?
Huh?
You get too excited, you know, you're like, oh, I gotta, like, you start thinking about something, and then the next thing you know, you're like, how did my scene get to a million vertices? Like, this is not how this was supposed to go.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I don't know, especially for us creators that have ADD, you know, it's just, you start working on one thing, and then an idea springs to you, and something, like, you start working on something else, and you're like, oh, but this would be cool, too, and then everything's half finished, and you're like, wait, you know, you lose sight of the original idea you had, so it's a struggle sometimes.
100%.
How long does each project take you around to complete?
Anywhere from usually like a day. So like I consider a day like full 8 hours of work. So anywhere from like a day to 3 days, probably on average. When I first started, God, it'd take like a week just because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But yeah, I think that's all of us.
Or you're like, you don't realize just like the non-fun stuff of, you know, you don't need 40 volume pass, you know, bounces to for your render, and it's just adding tons and tons of time, not actually increasing any quality.
Yeah.
I feel like that guy, that was the worst lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually I got lucky and saw one of Ducky's videos about like speeding up cycles, and I was working off of a Mac at the time, which I mean, I bought it just to like get more into like digital art and stuff, but lo and behold, I found out later that Macs aren't that great for that kind of stuff. I mean, they work, but it's just like a, it's like a consumer normal, you know, type computer. It's not like a professional.
If you're trying to, if you're trying to drop in like 3 4090s to run in parallel so you can render your scene in like 3 seconds,
yeah,
it's not going to happen on Apple.
Yeah. So anyways, but I saw Ducky's video on like speeding up cycles, and I did that whole thing. And cause yeah, I mean the Mac was slow enough as it is, so I didn't need any more like unnecessary passes to slow it down.
Yeah. 100%. Well, honestly, I am kind of curious. I do want to jump to the future stuff if you're down, Mikey, because I feel like we've already mentioned NFTs.
I know. And I feel like we've got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. The future.
All right. Welcome to the future part of the show. This is the part where we go over hypotheticals, things we just discuss and, you know, try and figure out where we think the future is going. No judgment, of course. So yeah, with this is always my favorite part of the show, you know, because there's just so many different possibilities right now. I mean, every single day, my head is just changing with different decisions on where I think things are going. With that being said, Steve, let's just get into it. I'm curious here, and we haven't started off with this question before, but just speaking of Pokemon and especially Pokemon Go, what's your thoughts on AR and the AR industry right now?
I think it's there. I don't know if it's going to be like a bigger thing. You know, Google tried to make it happen with their glasses, and maybe the technology was just too early to catch on or be good enough to where it's user friendly enough to use it all the time. I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, I think right now my bet would be on AI becoming a bigger part of everyone's workflow, as far as industry goes. Yeah. AR though, I mean, it has its use cases for sure.
So do you play, have you, like, cause I'm not going to lie to you, I'm kind of on the same boat with you. It's kind of AR is something I've been dabbling with. Probably the furthest I've gone is an Instagram filter. And, you know, so, but with that being said, just keeping on, because I feel like we're having a theme here with Pokemon, but have you played Pokemon Go? Are you still playing it at all? And if so, I stopped right kind of after a month or two. And if you are still playing, have they had any updates?
I know they've had some updates. I haven't played it since, God, when did it come out? Like 2016 or something?
2016, yeah. I think.
Right, so we're all on the same
boat. I played it for like a month or two and then kind of dropped it and totally forgot about it just because it felt stale. And, you know, you had to travel all over the place to try and find these Pokemon because they were, you know, only in specific spots.
Yeah, and you're like, who's got the
time? Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was working 5 days a week, and I had a car club going on, and still working at the studio as well. And I just had too much to do to be into it. But then, like, I think like a year or two later after I stopped playing, I found out, like, there's still people playing it. And since then, you know, I still notice, like, every now and then somebody's on their phone playing Pokemon Go. Like, here in San Diego, Balboa Park is a huge Pokemon Go, like, spot, you know? So on the weekends, everyone there is playing Pokemon Go.
Wow.
That's wild. Yeah. So, I mean, I've wanted to get back into it because people have told me that they updated it and it's really cool now and they've added a bunch of features. I just haven't done it yet.
Well, look, I don't mean to tear off the AR thing, but like you brought it up, so I have to ask. You mentioned AI. Yeah, so like let's talk about that for a second. I mean, it is such a like an insane topic because really, like, where do you start at this point? Mm-hmm. You know, even a few months ago I would have said that, but I mean, especially right now, it is like rapid.
Yeah.
But you mentioned it. I mean, what is your interfacing with AI been like? Have you messed with image generation? Have you done prompting for like the large language model stuff like ChatGPT?
Yeah. So Blender has that free add-on OpenAI, which is just like you can type like a prompt in and then render out whatever your scene is. And then it kind of tries to produce your prompt from your scene or something. I experimented with that a little bit and like didn't really get into it. What I really wanted to use it for was animations. So I was hoping that you could type in a prompt and then render out your entire animation and it would come up with different images every frame, right? But that wasn't the case. It would just render out your regular scene for an animation. It only produced your prompt if it was just a single image render. Right. And so I just kind of like dropped that. I know ChatGPT just, they have a Blender add-on for ChatGPT now. Haven't experimented with that yet. I just watched a couple of tutorials on it though, and it looked pretty interesting.
And is that the one that's sort of like an app assistant where you're able to type in a prompt and say like create 14 cubes on a grid or some, you know, offset in the Z direction or something?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So like as long as you use Blender's vocabulary, I think it'll, because it basically just generates a code and then puts it in. And so as long as you use like, you know, Blender's terminology and you're specific enough to where it can like spit out the code that it needs or whatever, like it'll produce like configurations of like base meshes for you and that kind of stuff. Right. I don't know if it could go into like creating actual, like, I don't know, custom characters per se or animations or anything like that. But
the possibilities are, especially now that people are using AI to just code other tools, now it's like, oh man, it's what can't
yeah
you
it's pretty it? Crazy
and yeah they opened up all the plugins, you know, so now GPT is able to like facilitate talking to certain APIs and like actually connecting to real data and, you know, booking your tickets for travel or sending emails for you. I mean, it's pretty wild. But it's one of the things I love about Blender though, is I think that because Blender is open source and so many, you know, you have so many contributing developers to it and people are constantly writing their own add-ons and like it's, you know, their API, I don't even write code very often, but like their API documentation is so robust that it's pretty easy to be able to like crank out a quick Python code that will work well with Blender. And I think it's awesome that they are kind of some of the first to start having these like direct integrations, exactly to your point of like having a, you know, basically a digital assistant while you're working in Blender. Hopefully overcome some of the like traditional complaints about Blender's UI and stuff. It's like, well, if you don't know the keyboard shortcut or where, you know, what tool to click on, you can just presumably type into an AI assistant and have it do it for you.
Yeah. So. Yep. Yeah. I think,
have you messed with,
go ahead. I was just going to say, I think it's only a matter of time before, like I was saying before, it becomes kind of like just a natural, normal, everyday part of your workflow. Just to make things easier, you know, instead of hitting 100 keys, you hit one and, it just kind of does everything for you. I don't know. It's, I'm a little salty towards it, to be honest, because I feel like, I don't know, with the whole AI art thing, you know, people type in a prompt and out pops this amazing thing. And then they post it online. Like, do we know if they did it or, you know, I don't know. It's just.
Yeah. The moral and like ethical and philosophical part is the part that I'm still pretty hung up on. I'm like, I think I'm pretty okay with finding an objective way to say, in theory, giving people tools that allow them to work less that produces more is a good
absolutely
thing. I just think, unfortunately, the implications of that in the way that we're set up as a society right now is going to just, it's ripe to be abused. It's ripe for like the people that are displaced already to be displaced further. Like there are, even the fact, I think back to like COVID, being in New York, there was this huge push the city had to do to be like, we have to get kids laptops because we can't have in-person learning. But a lot of kids don't have laptops and like internet access at their houses, you know, like those are the problems we're still solving. So, I mean, in theory, like all of us on this podcast right now, we're all highly technical. We are already, you know, working in very technical jobs. We're probably more prone and comfortable to like working with things like AI tools or like setting them up on your computer. I mean, there's like still so many barriers for so many people in order to sort of to utilize these in a way that's beneficial. So I agree with the saltiness in the sense that I'm like, it's all happening pretty quickly and I just hope we get it right. Yeah. You know?
I definitely, you know, I say this every podcast, but you put it on my gravestone, but I think that being an artist, you have to, it's going to become more about your brand and it's how well you're able to bring yourself out in that piece of work. And if people can't relate to that, then people aren't going to like it. And if you're just having randomly prompting dumb ideas or random ideas on, you know, Midjourney and then putting them into the public and people can't feel you in it and they don't see you in it, then they're not going to like it. You know, they need the human element. And funny enough, I was just listening to a podcast, Sam Altman, OpenAI CEO. It's really good. It was with Lex Fridman, and essentially they had one part. It's phenomenal. Came out just last week, 2.5 hours long. Dude hits home run questions, the good, the bad, the ugly. But one thing that I appreciated was that they were saying, you know, how important is the human element when it comes to things like art or these jobs? And he said, you know, it's funny because even though a computer can beat somebody in something, it doesn't mean that's what people want. And he was saying that essentially, you know, chess is probably bigger than it's ever been before, but a computer can always beat a human. And he said, and a matter of fact, a chess computer playing another chess computer would arguably be a much better game to watch than a human versus a human. But we all know this, but we still pick the human game to watch. And it's just,
right.
It's a fascinating part when it comes to like how much we like the human element in what we're observing. And so I think it's just something that, you know, some people might forget. And, you know, if you're not an actual artist and you're not providing that human element or your own story in the art, you know, then it's not going to come across that way and people aren't going to like it, you know? Right. And that's also a very long text to put on my tombstone, but you know,
we'll figure something out. We'll paraphrase it.
No, we'll just put a QR code that you scan.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
The other thing too, you know, you mentioned earlier NFTs, which we like to talk about when we're talking about the future of digital art and just where things are going and honestly where things have been even in the last 2 years. And the other thing is like you mentioned people, you know, prompting images and then posting images. And then it's like, I'm an AI artist, right? I've always found it interesting that these technologies have been growing in the way they have simultaneously, because it seems to me like one would solve really easily the issue that the other kind of brings forward, which is like blockchain technology would be really good at validating how images were created. And if there's, you know, metadata that can exist that says, oh, this is an AI generated image versus not, you know, we had the like Pope in a puffer jacket image that went viral and everyone chewed up. And it was like 24 hours later, it was like, okay, well, it's fake. It, you know, it was made by an AI. That more of that's going to happen. And so anyways, that's a long-winded way of bridging over to the sort of NFT space. I'm just curious, like, what has your experience been like creating art as an NFT, working on a blockchain? Like, what were your takeaways from that experience?
I got into it in March of 2021. I feel like NFTs were still like kind of a new thing to most people, at least. And I got on Twitter because a friend of mine suggested it, and that's kind of like where the NFT community like really started, I think, at least online. It wasn't so big on IG. I don't know if it still is or not. It kind of transitioned over after a while, but anyways, I had a great time. I was selling these, the isometric scenes with the Pokemon. I was selling them on OpenSea. I found a way to, cause at first I think you could only produce one image and sell just that one. You couldn't have multiple copies. So then I figured out a way to have multiple copies, and I don't know. I mean, I had fun with it for, I want to say like 6 months or something like that. And then kind of got away from it. There was another like really big Pokemon NFT creator, I guess. What were they called? Thick Pokemon. I don't know if you guys had seen them. Or, I'm sure you have.
I haven't. Yeah, I'm sure. Maybe somewhere in.
It was literally like Pokemon cards that they drew. Like it was literally the card, and then it had like a fat ass on it, obviously. And it was thick, you know, thick Bulbasaur, thick Charmander, whatever. They had a special move, but anyways, I started getting nervous, cause I was like, oh man, like what if like other companies get into this, Pokemon gets into it eventually. And like, technically I'm infringing on their IP, you know? So like, I don't know. I just didn't want to deal with that whole thing. So I kind of stopped.
Right. And I mean, it's like the longer that boom went on, I think those questions started popping up more and more, which was like, wait, what's the actual legality
of exactly
like,
yeah,
you know, reproducing anything, like, you know, selling an NFT that you had licensed, you know, some textures to make, like the legal rabbit hole could go pretty far. And honestly, most of that, as I mean, I haven't kept up with it as much, but it feels like most of that is still unresolved.
Yeah, I'm sure, for sure. But I know that Thick Pokemon, like their whole page got deleted on OpenSea. Their Twitter is like non-existent.
Wow, so really?
When I saw that, I was like, okay, like, I think I'm done.
Wow, I'm so shocked it went to those measures.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty big, dude. I know, I think their Charizard card, before I kind of stopped paying attention to everything, sold for like 15 or 20 ETH. And that was when ETH was like $4,400 or something. So then to have that page just disappear, you know? And I feel like the whole community after a while got very, I don't know, just cash grabby and rug pulley. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like nothing was real anymore. It went from like feeling very innocent and fun and like supporting actual artists to supporting con artists. And so that's,
and like the people that were left at the end, like, I don't know. I mean, the worst part of the NFT craze was just that like my entire, not that I'm on Twitter anymore, but like my entire Twitter algorithm changed because I was like, you followed one NFT account and then Twitter was just like, so you want NFT?
Exactly. Like, yeah.
You know, just like everything was like, oh, like tweet this 75 times to get on the whitelist.
Oh God. And then, yeah. You know, like, whitelist.
It was just so, it was like exhausting. And it was like, you know, I don't
join my Discord.
Join my Discord. I feel like, but also join the XR Motion Discord.
Oh yeah, well that's we don't.
That's different.
we have rules over there, right? But no, I mean, I just think that seems to be the general. Your experience seems to be a story that I've heard before. Like even from people that did really well in the early NFT craze, it just seems like, I don't know, there was something unsustainable about the model that did not, you know. The roots didn't really settle. I don't know. It's even now, it's like, it's kind of a weird place to go. Sometimes I'll go back into Twitter and just be like, what is NFT Twitter right now?
Yeah.
And
it is, it's very weird. I still have access to, so I made an account for the Pokemon stuff and like, I don't know. It's got like 1200 followers or something on there, but I built like a little community. I was like homies with, I don't even remember anymore all their usernames. But anyways, like some accounts that have like 40,000 followers, like I was on private chats with them and we had like a little NFT group, you know? And then I created another account where it was like my collector account and I had like Gutter Cat Gang and Gutter Dogs. And I don't know. I logged out of that one too, just because I was sick of getting notifications of like spam freaking tweets and messages about like buy my shit, you know?
So I am curious to see where it all, I mean, I think it will have a, a resurgence again. I just think it's going to have, you know, it'll come back in a different format. I
feel. Yeah, it probably will. It's like with anything that's kind of a collectible, right? It like has its day and then it goes away. Sometimes it comes right. back if it dug its roots deep enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just like this whole idea of like, you know, trying to tie it into like virtual experiences, which, you know, we talked about AR earlier. There's the VR side of stuff. There's,
yeah,
you know, XR, all that stuff, you know, whatever that encapsulates. It might be different in 5 years, but I think at some point there is going to need to be like enough brands have just dumped money into this that like it's some form of it's going to live
well,
on.
Well, you know, it's funny, as I was even just thinking, like, I know, you know, Prado was probably one of the most involved in using NFTs for utilization of other aspects in the field, whether it be for events, you know, discounts. I mean, it would be cool. You know, I was just thinking right now, you know, it's kind of annoying when it comes to, oh, like, hey, if you want to support XR Motion, for example, you know, there's, you know, the Discord, there's technically YouTube, Instagram. It'd be kind of cool if you could do like an NFT that would access any account you're on, you know, and it would be a universal code. And you, that would be great because it is kind of hard to keep everything in one place. And now everything has these like monetization, you know, right. things. But if you could just have one NFT that was, I mean, and by NFT, it's technically just a blockchain. Sounds better when you say blockchain, but I don't know. That would be an interesting use case for it.
Yeah. Right? I've always kind of said that, even to like friends and family, like I think that the NFT thing, like, it's cool. It's more of just like a online flex type thing more than anything, honestly. But I think the technology behind it, which is the blockchain, has like real use case. And that's obviously what's going to keep going on. It's, yeah. it's kind of like, you know, any new technology that emerges, it's kind of used and abused in weird ways at first, because we don't know exactly what it's for or what to do with it yet. But it ends up evolving into something that it wasn't originally designed for, that it works best for, you know what I mean? Mm. So I think that's kind of the same with the blockchain. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Just validating. I mean, like, as more of our life becomes digital, like, you know, Maria, who's, was on the podcast, Mariga Johnson, several episodes ago. And I think actually worth going back and checking out, because I think her short film is coming out. She has this whole concept of like, you know, what happens to your digital self after you die? You know, do people have like, do you have a digital will? Like, what, in addition to all the shit that you've accrued in physical reality, like your clothes, your car, the stuff you have in your office, the stuff you own, like, yeah, most people account for that, right? Like, give this to my kids, sell this to like pay my debts, whatever. Do you have an idea of what's going to happen to all the data you've created, like your Instagram accounts, your link, you know, a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. And so, I think that's also an interesting concept of like the blockchain, where it's like more of our own, you know, if we've learned anything, more and more of our lives are going to get digitized. Like, our health records one day will be digitized. Our financial records are really only now just starting to get digitized in a like kind of meaningful way. We finally have tax code around like, submit your Venmo transactions to make sure that you're not, you know, side hustling hundreds of thousands of dollars through Venmo and not paying taxes. I don't know, whatever that is. But like, it is just it's a interesting concept to think, well, if we could have a running ledger of all these transactions and be able to say like, this asset came from this person at this time, and before that it was owned by so-and-so, like, you know, it just seems, I don't know. It seems like a very reasonable way to approach the way the internet has been moving. Mm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Right now we have, you know, right, the way it works now, it's like you got to link your phone number and your email account, you know, like in some cases you're providing like your last three digits of your social security number to like 50 different websites. And then there are these data breaches, and like you got to sit there and be like, what did I use that email for? Yeah. You know, how much of my shit is compromised, because it's a pretty frustrating part of the way the internet works right now, I think.
Yeah. No, I definitely love the idea of, almost in a weird way, copying and pasting is like not a thing, because if somebody even wants to view your data or whatever, any of your information on the blockchain, that would be taken into account. And you could always see that, like, who's viewing it, where's your information going, you know, where, what's this account doing with the, I don't know. There's so much fun.
Well, and so like you said, Steve, you mentioned also, like, I know 95% in Blender, but like a little bit of a, of After Effects. So it sounds like maybe you have some familiarity with Adobe, but I don't know if you saw like Adobe Firefly, which I thought was a very interesting sort of proposal of how to do generative AI, where they trained all of their text image model on stuff from like Adobe stock. And I guess the idea is that eventually they're going to have, you know, per image that's generated, it's able to say, like, if you had, if your stock image was used to influence that output, you're being paid a certain fractional percentage by Adobe, which I think, which I'm sure, I mean, Mikey, I think you and I talked about, like, I have no idea what the back end of that looks like, but it sounds like it must be sort of blockchain-ish, right? You know,
yeah,
we called all these blocks of data in, and like, here's the, you know, the influence that it had on the final result.
Literally. I mean,
it sounds like it would have to use something, some kind of technology like it, right? I haven't really, I saw something about Firefly, what was it, like yesterday or 2 days ago, and I didn't like look at it.
Yeah, I think it's still beta,
I just got in the beta. It's pretty cool. I'm actually shocked. Now, it has, so essentially you can type in, the first one I typed in was pretty mind-blowing. I typed in water, and it just makes whatever text you put in. So if you said, like, water park, and then it'll say, what do you want the text to look like? And you say water, it'll generate that text in the form of water. It's pretty wild, and it looks amazing, and you can copy it and paste that, and you can do, I think they had the example, you know, if you did like Tony's Pizza Shop, and then you said, I want it to look like pepperoni pizza, it'll say Tony's Pizza Shop and then look like pepperoni pizza text.
That's pretty,
and it's it's really cool. You know, I'm pretty shocked by how well it does it. Now, you can kind of, you know, I started at first, you know, the awe and the wows come out, but then you start to like, all right, let's see what actually, how bad, you know, how good this thing is. And, you know, I tried to do things like gears off in the distance with, you know, appearing through fog with hard border lines around the edges of the absolutely could not do that. Like,
it's very much
like a generalistic texture that you can think of, and then it'll make that into the text. And then you can kind of say, like, do you want it to fit inside the box, or do you want it to kind of go outside? So if you did like cheese pizza, it might do like dripping cheese a little bit, you know, it'll sometimes throw in some fun elements, but it has very much a Midjourney version 3 kind of feel, where it's like you can tell, especially on complex images, that it's AI, you know, it doesn't feel like photo real stuff, but it's super fun. Guarantee we're going to see band, you know, posters using it all over the place. But yeah, they had some other fun stuff too that hasn't been released. Like, I know they're planning on doing the photo extension where you can just like select your photo, and then they're also going to do in paint drawing, where you can say, oh, you know, I want to wear a different hat, and you can just draw the hat and then type what kind of hat you want, and it'll autofill that.
That would be dope, actually.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to render things at like, render a fraction of my scene and then have the rest be done by AI so I can like save on render time. You know, like, those are the things that I'm waiting to get like stable versions of. And
there is a piece of software, I don't know if you saw it. I don't think it's too old either. But basically, so in Blender, if you rendered every other frame, so you had like 100 frames and you rendered each like 50 of them, right, skipping a frame each time, you could plug it into that software, and it comes up with that other, that in between frame on it.
Is it pretty good?
I haven't used it, but from what I saw, I was just watching YouTube and saw a video on it, so I watched a couple more on it because I was interested. And yeah, I mean, it, from YouTube, it looks great.
Damn!
Wow!
And is it paid? Is it paid, or is it?
I think it's free.
Damn.
That's the thing with AI. Like, they don't even put like a dollar paywall. It's just like, right. Here you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. No, that's true. And honestly, that's part of why the OpenAI decision to like not be as forward with their training data on GPT-4 was such a kickback, because apparently the general consensus in the AI community thus far has been like, share everything for free because we're trying to make this stuff better and useful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you're kind of, you have sort of like, I don't want to say infighting yet, but you do have some divergent paths of people that are developing AI stuff and what they're choosing to do with how much they share of how we made this, you know. But like even ESRGAN, I don't know what people actually call it, but that's an open source AI image upscaler that I've been using. Like instead of getting like Topaz, which I know a lot of people were using, like you can, if you're comfortable working in like your Windows terminal or command prompt or whatever, you can install a Python library and do like some really solid, you know, if you're doing like just a still render, for example, and you want to do it at 4K, like render it at 1080 and you know, upscale it 4 times, it's pretty solid. Mm-hmm. It's got, you know, pretty good results. So. Yeah. There are a lot of tools that are, I guess, technically AI powered, you know, that are just, that have like really obvious use cases for a lot of people right now. And so the more of that we get, I think the better too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure.
I also want to say just lastly with the Adobe Firefly, I think this is going to be the biggest out of all their features that they're launching, but it's going to be recolored and it's going to be vectors, AI vectors.
Oh, yeah. Which, yeah,
that's massive. That's wild. Cause I'm not much of an illustrative artist, but I know how to.
No, flat. It's actually what Johnny showed us, which was like taking just your line art and then like AI generating all your flats. If you're like a cell animator, it'll do all your, you know, you give it one colored pass of like a scene and then it will automatically fill the rest of your scene rather than having to go and hand paint it, which is
it's so
pretty
cool.
Pretty wild. And just useful. Like, of course, I mean, like there's so much about this stuff that I love, and that's the part that I'm worried about AI taking away, is just like cutting out a lot of the creative process and sort of cheapening just the general idea about creativity and how to go about solving problems. Like that's the part sometimes I like just sitting down and like not knowing the answer and experimenting for 6 hours. And, you know,
that just is like, true.
That's the part there. I mean, I don't always love it. I mean, there are a lot of times that I don't, obviously, but I would hate to see like the sort of de facto be like, you don't even need to be a 3D artist. You just open up a text a text box and you type some stuff in and like, we're done. Mm. Like, it's not fun.
Yeah,
but again, I hope that human element isn't going to be there, you know, like, what does it mean? Who is this for? Is it an actual sad story? Like a sad story might not just be worth it. Like it's got to be a true story now. Like that might be the things that,
you know, what's an interesting one that I've thought about a lot recently. Did you guys watch Westworld?
Yeah.
I've watched like an episode or two.
All right. So like general premise, just hyper futuristic. We have AI that can be implemented in robots that are indistinguishable from humans, yada, 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 how that all plays out. But I didn't, you know, I kind of fell off the show, but I did watch the last season just out of curiosity and I guess boredom. But there was this whole part of the plot line is like one of the jobs you can have in the future is like you sit at a computer console and you just start telling a story and then content is generated based on the story you're telling it. And then that content is consumed by people, right? Like just like the Netflix of content, but like imagine infinite choices.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, people sitting behind a desk saying, all right, this story is about a girl that lives in the city, but her dad is sick. And like all of it's getting rendered in 3D photorealism real time. I remember watching it not even 6 months ago and being like, yeah, that'd be cool. But like, probably not, we're not there yet. Right. And now I'm kind of like,
we're probably another 6 months away from that.
I know.
Yeah, like, and it's just, it's going to change a lot of stuff. It's going to change, like, not only, I think that people will ultimately still value human made stuff, but first of all, you have to be able to validate that for it to have worth. aka the blockchain. But then two, it's also like, it's just going to change the way we consume stuff. I already feel like there's way too much shit to watch in a day. You know, like everyone's always recommending new show. You got to watch this show. You got to watch the documentary. You got to watch, you know, wait until we got like AI generated movies. It's just going to be like incessant,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's exciting. One thing I wanted to ask you, Steve, kind of stepping away from some of the technical stuff, but where do you see yourself being in the next few years? I know we just laid out a wide net of possibilities of what the future might hold.
Yeah.
But, let's just say you had somebody handed you $500,000 now or $1 million, a hypothetical number, just a bunch of money to maybe do whatever you want with it. Like what kind of art do you want to make in the future? Where do you see yourself kind of being in this hypothetical space?
Yeah, I might be a professional prompt texter, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Like going back to the music stuff, I really want to, I don't know, just try and make something happen with artists, you know, bigger artists, obviously, to make it a full-time thing to where I'm paid well enough to, I think I could do this all day. Yeah, I think that's kind of my end game right now is just working with artists, being involved with the music industry. So that's kind of where I'm headed. We'll see though.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely see that, man. Cause your stuff is just so good. I mean, you just have a very phenomenal, broad understanding of what people want to see. And you're just so good at executing it. I mean, my favorite work I'm just going to say from you is, I think it's you have like just 1,000 Pikachus raging hardcore with the lights just flashing and like the cameras just going crazy. I don't know. It's just so good. The way the music's incorporated with the lighting and the dance, it was so good, man. I'm excited to see a lot more of your work as it comes out.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much of it is my stuff. I think most people just see, you know, Pikachu on a screen or Pokemon on the screen and they're instantly like, oh yeah, you know, they're in love because it's Pokemon. Everyone loves Pokemon, right? So having fun with it and I'm glad people like it. So
absolutely. Well, I mean, that's all the questions I have. I think we've tackled most of the future stuff. Andrew, do you have any more questions?
I was just going to open it up to Steve and see if he wanted to mention any projects or anything we should be on the lookout for moving forward. But yeah, I mean, other than that, great episode.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I've got something in the works right now. Can't talk about it yet. But hopefully, you know, within the next week or two, I'll be able to, I don't know, send you guys a message or something and say, hey, this happened, you know?
Yeah, yes. Please do. We will definitely share it out, and I'm excited to see
what you're
doing. Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you guys having me on, too. It's been a good talk.